So the idea is we'll just pick different topics each week. Maybe we'll continue with theme. Again, my my interest currently is in public health issues, so halakhic aspects of public health. So I'm going to try to relate different topics to see what there is. There is a dearth of halakha on public health. It doesn't relate to it. We can deal with individual situations very well, and you'll see here that the post can relate to it very, very well, and it gets to the public health aspect, and things start to get very murky, and then it's unclear what happens. So the approach here is, how do we deal with, this was a problem at the beginning of the pandemic, there was a fear that we would have a shortage of ventilators. We pointed out in the end it wasn't really much of an issue. There was more of a shortage of respiratory therapists than ventilators, which we'll see may actually have a difference in the end, depending on how you look at it. But that was the concern. So there were a lot of guidelines written. What do you do if patients come in, and there are ventilators currently, but they are, you know, the thinking was, and this I think was, did bear out. But this was even true in the H1N1 swine flu pandemic, that the people who would come in first would be the sickest. They would require ventilation, but they would also have the least likelihood of recovery. The second wave would be the people who were initially healthier, who were able to delay by a day or two, the second wave, the healthier people coming in. But the problem is, if you gave everyone who came in the ventilator on the first day, you wouldn't have anything on the second wave, so then what do you do? What do you do when you can sort of predict this happening? Of course, we're not going to hold ventilators in reserve just in case there might be some wacky situation like this, but given that it's a pandemic and it was developing and we could sort of predict it and model it, and even if you couldn't for the first week, during the second week, you could see this happening. You can track the waves. You can predict this with not certainty, but with enough certainty for there to be a concern. What do you do?
When do you say damach tzumach tzayin?
We're only going to talk about who do you save. We're not going to talk about sacrificing one for another. So the question was, okay, what do you do? So why are you putting a person on the ventilator if he has no chance of recovery? Because he could last for a little bit. He's not going to recover. He's not going to feel a complete recovery. But instead of dying right now, you'll give him an extra day, 2 week, whatever it is. So we call that chaye shah. Chaye shah means short-term life, as opposed to chaye kiyum or chaye olam, which is not chaye olam means live forever, that's not true, but to live to back to where they would have been normally. So we assume, and this seems to be intuitive, and we'll see it borne out in the source, but it's intuitive if you have two patients in front of you, one who, even if you help them, only has chaye shah, and one who, if you would help them, would have chaye olam. So then you should treat the one who, and you can only treat one. You have a limited resource. You should treat the one who has chaye olam as opposed to the one who has chaye shah. Now, we're not going to do anything to the one that has chaye shah. We're talking about, I only have limited staff. I only have one ventilator. Who do I give it to? I should give it to the one that has chaye olam as opposed to the one that has chaye shah. And that's sort of what we want the halacha to say. I shouldn't speak for you. That's what I want the halacha to say. That's what seems to be intuitive. And that is, in fact, what the Chazon Ish says the halacha says. So there's a famous case in the Gemara by Messiah Sanach Bet. Rabbi Yochanan, hi, v'chei achicha imach ma'avid lei. The famous line, v'chei achicha imach. This is in the context of tzedakah. You're supposed to give tzedakah, v'chei achicha imach. So your brother can live with you. Meaning, give enough so people can support themselves. That's the context of that pasuk in the end of Vayikra. So he says, no. It's l'chad etanya shlaim shi v'halkim baderach v'yadacham hem kiton shomayim. Famous case, two people are working in the desert, and one of them has a jug of water. Im shotim shneim meitim. If they split the water and each one gets half, they will both die. And if one of them takes it and not the other, he'll have enough energy, he'll have enough hydration to make it to safety. What do you do? Because you have to make a choice. Meaning, not making a choice is also a choice. Because if neither one drinks, so that's somewhat absurd, and you say, well, I can't choose, so then they both die. So Darash ben Torah. Ben Patara says, better to split it. And so if you read the words are, v'al yira echad mehem b'mitata shel chavero, one shouldn't see the death of the other. It sounds more like one shouldn't be the indirect cause of the other one's death, meaning if I drink the whole water, I'm the reason that he didn't drink it. Now, I didn't actually, right, he didn't say, well, you're a murderer. You're not a murderer. You didn't do anything. But I am the indirect cause of his death. I'm not that, right? Even in some way. No, it's better to drink it. Ad sheba Rabbi Akiva v'limei, Rabbi Akiva disagreed. V'chei achicha imach. The pasuk by tzedakah, v'chei achicha imach, your brother should live with you. So he says, with you means chayecha kodmin l'chayecha v'recha. With you presupposes that you are there first, and he is living with you, so I take precedence. What exactly are they arguing about? What in the world is, what does Ben Patora think? Like, You should. Why is Ben Pethor make any sense? They're both going to die. Isn't it better that one should live? It, meaning there's a mitzvah to save a life. So just let's focus on the mitzvah to save a life for a moment. There's a mitzvah to save a life, and we're giving up on that mitzvah. So shouldn't we both be fighting to save a life? So shouldn't we at least try to save one of the lives? They're both going to die anyway. What did Ben Pethor gain by having both of them split it? What exactly does he accomplish? So the Chazon Ish gives a fascinating explanation. He writes it here. It's in the Likutim in Bava Masechta Tanach Bet. He also writes it in his Ha'arot on Reb Chaim. He says it in a little bit of a different language, but it's here as well. So if you look in on the third line, V'hacha tamei de Ben Pethor. So what is Ben Pethor thinking? The kaven de yesh chayei sha'a lishneihem. Dim yesh du shneihem yichru lefi sha'a. The kaimal an yom apehei amar alef al chayei sha'a mefachin et hagal. Im kein ein chayei olam shelo docha chayei sha'a shal chaveiro. He says, wait a minute. If neither one drinks, let's say they'll both die in an hour. But if they both drink, they'll both die in 6 hours. Okay, right? Because they'll each have a little bit of hydration. And if one drinks, he'll have the 12 hours, he'll make it towards... Or simplifying, he'll make it towards safety. So isn't it better? So if no one drinks, they die in an hour. If they both drink, so then they die in 6 hours. So they've each gained 5 hours. They've each gained chaye sha'a. So he says, well, think about the math then. How many mitzvot would you have fulfilled? Two. You've saved two lives. Because when he points at the Gemara in Yom Pehei, he says, al chaye sha'a mefakim et hagal. Meaning, even if someone doesn't have a long time to live, we're still allowed to violate Shabbos for them. We're still allowed to violate all that, we don't necessarily have to, we're not going to get into that right now, but you're allowed to violate Torah prohibitions to extend someone's life, even for a few moments, even for a few hours. So you see that for Chayei Sha'a, you're allowed to violate Shabbos. Well, if for Chayei Sha'a you're allowed to violate Shabbos, it must mean that extending Chayei Sha'a is the mitzvah of Pikuach Nefesh. Because why are you allowed to violate Shabbos otherwise? You're allowed to violate Shabbos because you're fulfilling the mitzvah of Pikuach Nefesh. Since you're fulfilling the mitzvah of Pikuach Nefesh, even for Chayei Sha'a, so he says, Ben Pethor says, you have the opportunity to do 10 mitzvot. So shouldn't you do 2 mitzvot instead of 1 mitzvah? If one drinks, you've done 1 mitzvah. If both drink, you've done 2 mitzvot. So shouldn't you try to maximize mitzvah observance in the world? Then he puts it in a little bit of a different frame. He just says, okay, and because of that, but you'll say, okay, but they're qualitatively different mitzvot, no? One, if I drink, I'm fulfilling 1 chaye olam. If we split it, I'm getting 2 chaye sha. You're right, I'm getting 2, but I'm getting 2 chaye sha, not the different. So he says, no. Ein chaye sha shelo docha chaye sha shel chaveiro. He says, no. Because we treat chaye sha, if it's a mitzvah of pikuach nefesh, you can't sacrifice one to save another. The avak of them is sacrifice. So he says, right? Meaning when you think about it for a moment, it's a funny thing to think about, but chaye sha we're treating like you're saving his life. I'm saving his life, and I'm not asking about what the consequences are. It's a life-saving action. So 2 life-saving actions is better than 1 life-saving action. So he says, well, wait a minute. He says, well, what if it's in a different situation? The Gemara of Avodah Zarah talks about the following case, that one person's life is at risk, and so they have 6 months to live. They can do some type of risky surgery where they'll get 5 years, but there's a 30% chance they die on the table. Right? Again, they live for 6 months, they can do a risky surgery that they'll live for 5 years, but there's a 30% chance they'll die now. So if they do the surgery, so there's a 30% chance they'll die today, and they'll lose 5 months, 6 months, right? They do nothing, they have 6 months. So if you do the surgery, there's a 30% chance of you losing 6 months, but there's a 70% chance of you gaining 5.5 years. So is that allowed or not? So I would have thought, well, based on what he's saying, think about it for a minute. If Chaye Shah is, we're treating it the same as Chaye Olam, you're not allowed to risk your Chaye Shah for Chaye Olam, because you're saving up. The Gemara there is very clear. I'm allowed to make that choice for myself. I'm allowed to choose to risk my Chaye Shah to obtain my own Chaye Olam. I'm allowed to take that risk. Rav Moshe Feinstein says as long as the risk is less than 50%. Fine.
Not
okay.
For somebody else.
Not for somebody else. I could choose that for myself. So he says, Shani Sari Shneim Shavim Mishkut Chaye Olam. He says, but this case is different, because I'm not risking my Chaye Shah for you, I'm risking your Chaye Shah for me. In the water case, right, I'm taking away your Chaye Shah, so I get Chaye Olam. You're not allowed to do that.
Even though it's your water.
Oh, so we haven't gotten to whose water it is. Let's assume, right, the question is whose water it is. We haven't dealt with it. He'll deal with it.
That's the...
Correct. He'll come to that at the end, whose water it is, right?
But can he choose to not drink water?
So we'll get there in a second, right? So Rabbi Elias is going to argue no. You can't. But even according to Ben Patur. So, meaning here, I can't risk your chay shah to gain my chay olam. That's not okay. The kolacha mem sheish the yichy chay olam. Uvala vaker et asmo al chaver mishum shamayim shelo. And so now, if according to the Ben Patura, if it's my water, I'm prioritizing me over you. Meaning, if I can't prioritize me over you, because I'm sacrificing your chaye shah for my chaye olam, that's what Ben Patura is saying. And therefore, according to Ben Patura, I can't. So, fine. So can I give it to you? But if I give it to you, then you have to give it to me. Meaning we each have to, I can say, you know what, I'll give up, it's up to you. But now you have a mitzvah to give it to me, and then I'll have a mitzvah to give it to you. And it's chozer chalilo, and that's why he splits this.
You can't kill yourself?
No, killing yourself never allowed. But here he's saying you can give half, but everyone, we each have to, you end up, you'll be in an endless loop. Fine. Fine, okay, good. If you look at the fourth to last line, Rabbi Akiva Savar, okay, so that's a very good reason. Meaning, so it sounds like two mitzvahs instead of one. It's fairly compelling, but it's not what I want it to be. So Rabbi Akiva says no.
But how do you just dismiss the fact that it's your water?
But it's my responsibility. Who cares? It's my responsibility to save your life, and it's my responsibility to save my life. Which is an interesting side point, which we'll have to get to another point, another time. It's a good question. Meaning, my mitzvah to save my life and my mitzvah to save your life, are they equivalent? I think yes.
Not according to Rabbi Akiva, obviously.
So, correct. But I think even when you have to make a choice, that's what people are saying. There's no difference. The mitzvah is the same mitzvah.
Yeah, but it's
like the chai b'hem. So, no, the chai b'hem means I'm allowed to violate, but I can't kill you. So, no, but I can't, no, so that's where we keep, no, not the chai b'hem. So, no, the chai b'hem will tell me I can violate Shabbos to save you, right? But I can't kill you to save him.
This is basically Shev al Tassav, right?
So that's what he's getting to Rabbi Akiva. Fine. We're not going to follow Ben Patur. The more important part is Rabbi Akiva, but you understand Rabbi Akiva based on Ben Patur. Right? What would Ben Patur say in all of these cases is very interesting. Meaning, and what would Ben Patur do? Does he need a pasuk for this? Is that, if there was no pasuk in the Torah, what would we do? What would Ben Patur say? So here it sounds like Ben Patur is just telling you, I don't hold of your pasuk in the Torah. Your pasuk of Echeachi Chaimach, I'm going to talk about Tzedakah, it has nothing to do with this. So, you're right, meaning, is Rabbi Akiva coming and saying, Ben Patur, you're right. You make a lot of sense. But the Pasuk told me X. So therefore, we'll just read Rabbi Akiva first. Rabbi Akiva said, Mishum chayecha kodmim nifter ma'atal chayisha shel chavero. Because the Torah said, my life takes precedence, I now am no longer obligated to save your life at the expense of my own. Right? That's the Chiddush HaTorah, v'chayechi chayimach. And if the Torah wouldn't have said it, It sounds like Rabbi Akiva would agree with the Ben Patura. So they debate, what would Ben Patura? These are academic questions, theoretical questions. The Torah does say it in the end. He says, meaning Rabbi Akiva says that the Torah is saying, fundamentally, I don't have to give up my life, right? And it sounds like you're not allowed to. Chayecha kodmim. And I don't have to, the mitzvah of saving your chaye sha'a does not come to, at the expense of my chaye olam. So that's the next paragraph. So Venera de'en chaver rasha, so now what if, can you steal it? Meaning, you'll tell me, okay, that's beautiful. Stealing is not allowed. The Torah says you're not allowed to steal. The Torah says you're not allowed to do 365 different things. But out of them, 362 of them you're allowed to violate to save your life. Stealing's one of them. You're allowed to steal to save a life. So, right? To save a life, you're allowed to steal. The Arachan there disagrees. We assume you're allowed to steal to save a life. So I should steal the water from you. He says, no.
Not if you have this passage,
so he says, no. Venera de'en chaver rasha ligdol mimenu meimav. Even though I'm allowed to steal to save my life, or your life, since the Torah here said that the water boat was my water, so I have to save my life first, if you take that water, you're killing me. And so he says, you're not allowed to take the water in that case to save your own life. Fine. And now he points out, it's just the other case. Yes. So the question is, is Rabbi Akiva saying you have to or you're allowed to?
Okay, well, let's say it was just Chayesh Shah. Here's Chayesh Olam. Would you say, Rabbi Akiva would say you would be Chayesh?
No, it sounds like not. It sounds like Rabbi Akiva is saying, I'm exempt from that your, meaning, let's not get into the, like it's close. Let's pretend it's like minutes versus years. So no, I would think if it's Chayesh Shah and Chayesh Shah, he would say no. The Torah is telling you that I'm allowed to prioritize my Chayesh Olam over your Chayesh Shah, but that's it. It's not me over you. It's twofold. It's me and Chaye Olam over you and Chaye Shah. You're saying, what if it was you?
See, the Pasuk doesn't say that. The Pasuk just says you're going to live. I mean, maybe it just means Chaye Shah.
Even in my own chayisha. Okay, interesting. Yeah. So let's just jump to the next piece here. Just he talks about the third case you mentioned on the next page. Let's say I have the water and I have two people in front of me. I'm good. I'm good. So now who do I give it to? So Tali Bepluk that the Leben Petur. So he says, okay. He says that's also part of the machloket. Why Leben Petur not in l'shneim? So I should give both. I should split it. V'yamut l'shneim, and they both should die. I mean, I should give both of them. I have no reason to choose one or the other. Because I give it to one, he'll have to give it to the other. Meaning, according to Ben Petura, even when it was my water, I have to split it. So if it's me, the third party's water, and I give it to one of you, you're going to have to split it anyway. So I could just save you that step, and I'll give it to both. Well, Rabbi Akiva, and this is where his point is,
how does he get that?
Sort of a black point out, because Rabbi Akiva is a double Kiddush. It's not only me over you, it's Chai Olam Avar Chai Shah. Meaning, Rabbi Akiva is teaching us, based on this pasuk, that Chai Olam takes precedence to Chai Shah.
It's a Mishi Yitzah. I can choose.
I can choose, because one, they're both equal. Yeah, they're both equal.
So
it's one Chai Olam over two Chai Shahs. Correct.
Well, one of them is, right.
Correct.
You see?
You could choose.
I don't know if you're learning. I don't know if you can learn that out from Rabbi Akiva or not.
So, if the Chazanish wouldn't have said it, you're right, but the Chazanish said it. And he says, "Venira de chayav liten leechad." He says, "You have to give it to one of them. You can't just say, you have to." Liten leechad. Kemesh b'shvil chayecha kodim amar Torah de chay olam shelo kodim chayisha shel shel echad chayim kodim lechayisha shel shnayim. Meaning, and that's the halacha now. The halacha is chay olam takes precedence to chayisha, and therefore you must give it to one of them. Good. So that's the point. Right? So we see from here that Chai Olam takes precedence to Chai Shah.
That would just mean if two people come in, need a respirator at the same time.
At the same time. So far, that's what we want. I wanted to say intuitively, two people come in, I would prioritize the one who has a better hope of recovery over the one who has a lesser hope of recovery, because Chai Olam should take precedence to Chai Shah. Good. But that's not what happened. That's not what happened in real life. Meaning, that could happen in real life.
But this is like, two people come with a gunshot wound. One person is definitely not going to survive, and you only have one
Yes, so the same idea. Absolutely. So it would be the same rules. So now, it's interesting, because Rav Moshe Feinstein has tshuvas where he was asked these very questions. How do you prioritize in these trauma cases? Meaning, that Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach has, unfortunately, this also. When they arrive on a terrorist scene in Israel, what do? Meaning, the problem was is that, it's a little bit gruesome, but when there are a terror blast, so the victims on the edge are sometimes more easily recovered. It depends where you come from, who's in front of you right now. So, okay, but I encountered this first person, so now am I obligated to save them first because I encountered them first? We have a principle, Osek B'mitzvah, Pater Min HaMitzvah, or in Ma'avir Na LaMitzvah. Maybe there's a mitzvah right here, and I'm not allowed to walk 10 feet later to see what's going on. So Rav Leif deals with that also. He doesn't think it applies to the mitzvah of Pikuach Nefesh, but fine. The problem here is, can you hold these ventilators in reserve because you know of the situation? So generally we assume that the mitzvah of Pikuach Nefesh applies only, it's based on the Nodi Behuda and the Chazam Sofer, to a chola bifaneinu, meaning you're allowed to violate Shabbos when there's someone in front of you. Chola bifaneinu. Meaning
that's
the
Kiv Egg with autopsies, right? It's the same thing.
It's the Nodi Behuda, right? The Nodi Behuda was asked about an autopsy, right? They wanted to do an autopsy on the patient. They said, why? Because he had some surgery. It sounds like he had a gallstone. It's a little bit unclear. It says a stone. A stone in some kiss, an Evan Sheba kiss, a stone in the pocket. Let's pretend it's a gallstone from it. Doesn't really matter. The surgery failed. The guy died. So they wanted to do an autopsy to determine why he died so we could do it in the future. And then he says, absolutely not. He says, absolutely not. If you had another patient, he doesn't say this explicitly. The Chazam Sofer says explicitly, if there was another patient now who needs that information, who you're going to save their life, so you're allowed to do an autopsy. That's fine. But who knows if you're ever going to see a patient like this again? They have to remember, medicine back in the day was, who knows if you're ever going to see a patient like that ever again? Modern day situation is very, very different because you might see another patient in 5 minutes, and there's a hospital, and we're all connected to each other, meaning even if you'll never see that patient again, it could be someone in Japan will see that patient again, and you'll publish it and you'll save that person's life. Rabbi Bleich is explicit both in this article that I quoted here, and he said it in Shir a number of times, that he thought that was obvious. That even if there's a patient in India or Japan and you're going to publish on it and save their life, that qualifies also, because we live in such an interconnected world. He thinks that he read Rav Moshe wouldn't allow it, Okay. Not for our issue right now. But usually we need a chola b'faninu. So chola b'faninu, we've seen that already expanded to not exactly right in front of us, right? It doesn't have to be right in front of us. It could be somewhere else. The Chazon Ish is very clear. The Chazon Ish, in a different piece, he's like, this whole notion of chola b'faninu doesn't mean right in front of us. He means, what's the likelihood of you encountering one of these again in the future? Meaning we're talking about statistics. It's a statistical question. So then if it's about statistics, so let it be about statistics. So figure out what's the statistical likelihood of you encountering something like this in the future. So there's a shuv of the Tzitzel Yezer. He wants to know there's an ambulance that is in some yeshuv in north of Yerushalayim. This yeshuv has an ambulance. And something happens on Shabbos, and they drive the ambulance to the hospital, which is in Yerushalayim. Can they drive back? Can they drive back? So he says, well, so he's going to say yes. So the question is why. So right now they don't need them.
Most of the different reasons.
Right. So he says, right, well, right now they don't need them. Right? Right now everyone's fine. But if someone will need them, they'll drive. So what's the likelihood of them needing them? So I don't know. You run an ambulance 6 days a week. Figure out what's the likelihood that you have ever two cases in one day. Some of these issues are pretty small.
So
he says, figure out what's the statistical likelihood of you needing to go back, and that's enough. If there's never more than one a day, never. It's so rare. Meaning, I don't know, it depends where you live. It depends on the size of the yeshiva. It depends on the situation. If it's so insanely rare that you'll ever have another one again, you only have one per day. It never happens. So then you probably wouldn't be allowed to go back. But if it's common that it happens more than one a day, then you need to go back because being back will be faster for the patient who needs it, right? Or if it's like 10 minutes left to Shabbos. Okay, so you have to figure out what's the likelihood of getting a call in those 10 minutes. Might make a difference. So he says the statistics are what controls here. If it's yes, then yes. If it's no, then no. But we assume that the notion of chola b'faneinu takes statistical consideration into consideration. It's all about statistics.
What's the percentage? Like 50%?
So that's a good question. That's a good question. But no, because even suffix tikuach nefesh will violate Shabbos. Right? If there's a 10% chance that someone's going to die, will violate Shabbos. 2%, 1%. At some point, you're going to say it's too little, but 2% chance that someone's going to die? Absolutely violate Shabbos. You have to. So at least 2%, and I'm just throwing a number out. You can probably say one or even less. So we're going to jump to Mincha Asher for a moment. We're going to skip the Rabbi Bleich piece. Is el gabesh eile machen agil matav shis beit hakolim machzor gamur v'mochonad an shama. The original question: there's going to be a scarcity of ventilators. Well, if it's pachuta in your name, you're diman beberush v'shaot akrovet yagil beit cholim cholim shiuskukim no ashot l'mochonot eile. And we know that in the future, patients are going to come in who need them. He's painting it a little bit more extreme, but when I heard him say it, it was less extreme. And right now, there's a patient who, like, he has no hope. He has no hope. We're going to put him on the ventilator, because that's what we do. Maybe he'll make it a couple hours. But we know that there are going to be people coming in very soon who need it. Our question. And if we give it to him, to the patient who comes in right now with low chances, we won't be able to give it to the patient later. It's exactly our case. So it's just interesting to read his language, the last line here. And he goes, I'm nervous to even answer this question. Just, okay. It's something we talk about these things, but this is actually happening. So he says, they can say no. I can't give it to you because I have to prioritize chaye olam over chaye sha'a. This person has chaye sha'a, and it's not there's an off chance that someone's going to come in. We're in the middle of a pandemic. We're in the middle of the first wave. You're in New York City. This was happening. You're right. Maybe in Florida it was different, depending on where you are. Fine. But in the heat of this, chaye olam over chaye sha'a. But why? But there's no chola b'faneinu. You're not allowed to do that. Where's the chola? There's no chola. So he said this, and Rabbi Shechter wrote it. The Rabbi Shechter piece wasn't on the web anymore, but he wrote it. During a pandemic, everyone considered, the chola who's going to come tomorrow is considered b'faneinu. Meaning it's the same point of the Tzitzel Yezer. The statistical chola is b'faneinu right now. Meaning if I know it's going to happen, so if he's here right now, the fact that he's not here right now is irrelevant. He's statistically considered to be here, and that's fine.
He's on the way.
He's on the way. Even if he's not on the way, he's coming, and it's as if he's here right now. Right. And even if he's not, but we statistically consider it. Wonderful. Right. Bleich seems to disagree. He says, he's talking in this case of, he has a long piece. I'm happy to share it with you. He wants to know this question, and then also, can you remove a patient from one, a ventilator to give it to another? So let's say we put this patient on the ventilator, the one who came in with Chayesha, and he's going to last for 3 or 4 days. And a patient comes in day 2, who's had a chance of recovery. But I got the first patient on the ventilator who's got 2 days left. Can I remove it from him to give it to the second patient? So that we really don't like. So let's just read it, because
reading the Chazonius the way Rabbi Black is interpreting.
Yeah, I'm in Talmud, so I probably I'm biased.
In New York City, the answer would be no, you can't. In Florida law, yes, you can.
Yeah, so it depends on the hospital. Yeah, so he does. So he says like this. So, And the question is, you can give it and you only have one? So then I think you can give it to whoever you want. You have to flip a coin.
That's basically, yeah.
Yeah. So he says here, nevertheless, it is in this writer's opinion, he always writes about himself in third person, that application of halachic principle of triage does not justify detaching even a terminally ill patient from a ventilator. Okay, fine. Not my issue right now. But the logic is, with some rare exceptions, a person is not permitted to accept death in order to preserve the life of another, right? I'm not allowed to sacrifice my life to save you, except for certain circumstances. Chazonish makes it clear that the traveler having a right to a container of water may neither give it nor share it with a person with similar needs. Meaning if it's my water, I'm not allowed to share it with you. I have to prioritize myself. A person does not have a proprietary interest in his life or body. It's not my choice. Consequently, a person does not have the right to renounce his use of a ventilator for preservation of his own chayesha, even if another patient may derive greater benefit. I'm not allowed to sacrifice my chaye shah for your chaye olam. You have to, but I don't. A fortiori, therefore, society may not demand that a ventilator be held in reserve and not be made available to a patient who requires a ventilator for extension of chaye shah. He's here now. He's chaye shah at stake. He has a right to say, I want it now, and he is not allowed to let someone else take it. That is so, even if the patient on the ventilator agrees, because it's not up to him, because this is not your choice. That is also the case even when it is statistically certain that a patient will appear whose life can be saved and restored to good health if assigned a ventilator. Even if we know that he's in the ER waiting room. It's the opposite. So why? So he says, well, who does the ventilator belong to? Because that's the Chazon Ish's question, right? Who does the ventilator belong to? Because the Chazon Ish would tell you if it's yours. So he says, well, in the public hospital, it belongs to all of us.
Yeah.
It belongs to all of us. We all pay taxes. We're all citizens. It belongs to all of us. In Israel, they have this concept of a private hospital. And even in this country, if I'm not mistaken, private hospitals are not owned by private corporations. It's a little bit different. But let's assume we all have a stake in the equipment. We all have a say in the equipment. And therefore, I have a right to say it's my equipment. It's my equipment. And therefore, I have a right to say I get it right now. And society can't say no, but it's mine. The point I wanted to bring out was,
there's enough to mean it if it's a private hospital where they own it and you don't.
So then they might own it. They can do what they want. Meaning then you have no claim for the ventilator.
It's like your water. So it's the same.
Right. So the question, though, is really, in the private hospital, my insurance is still paying, right? Okay. So even in the private hospital, so long as my insurance is paying.
The government gets a private
hospital. Right. The government gives money. So I don't think these private institutions really exist. Let's assume everyone's public. But what I think is fascinating is how they're looking at the question. Right, Leich is looking at the question of each one of us has a stake in what's happening, right? And therefore, I get it because it's my right to get it. And Rabbi Schechter and Rabbi Weiss and Rabbi Asher Weiss are looking at it. Society has a responsibility to take care of people, and we as a society, which is a thing, we've developed this notion of a thing. So if it was one doctor, if it's my ventilator, I have to choose who to give it to. And I have to choose Chayei Olam over Chayei Shah, because he's told me that. But if it's not mine, it's yours, then you have to take it as for the Chayei Shah. So whose ventilator is it? Is it
me? Because he was the Rav of
yeah, I don't know.
The hospital before Rav Bashar.
Correct. So I don't think he deals with this. I don't think he has this part of the Chiluk. But I think this is fascinating. I mean, how do you look at this public resource? Is it mine, or is it society's? Does society even exist? Or as Leich has this approach in general in life, society doesn't exist. There is no corporation. These things don't exist. This halacha recognizes either private ownership or joint ownership. That's it. Either I own it, we own it, or nobody owns it. But that's it. Those are the only three ways of ownership that exist in the world. And so you're running out of options. But if you're willing to recognize that there's this thing that can sometimes exist that has responsibilities. I mean, just from a public health perspective, is it each one, I mean, if you want to take it to the extreme, is each one of us is responsible for ourselves, or is it that there's a societal responsibility towards all of us? I think that might be underlying part of the difference between their approaches.